Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Welcome to A Plate in Time. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Plate in Time, 1968. And I'm here with Marissa again.
Hi.
Yay!
You couldn't get rid of me.
I know. And I got these cool lights behind me now. We're ramping up what we call production.
Yeah.
Good values. So yeah, 1968, Plate in Time. What do you know? What do you got? What do you understand in this era? Anything?
Of Virginia?
Virginia?
Where are we?
We're in 1968.
Virginia, right?
No. we're in the year 1968 in A Plate
but
in
not
Time.
Exclusively Virginia.
Right. Not exclusively.
We're just in 1968.
Right. The year.
Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't know where you got Virginia. I don't know.
Kennedy kicked the bucket. So now who is it? It's Nixon?
No.
It's the one in the middle that I don't care about because it's just like one of those duplicate presidents.
A duplicate?
Well, not a clone, but like same bin of cottage cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Different.
Old
like,
white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is it? Is it Lyndon B. Johnson?
Yes.
Oh, that
correct.
Guy.
Correct. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. No wonder why I didn't remember him.
Yeah. So, yeah, Lyndon B. Johnson. Also, gotta say, 1968, tumultuous time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I remember. It was the 60s. It was crazy.
Lots of civil rights.
Right. Civil Rights Act was signed this year, 1968.
Still in the Vietnam
War. Right. Yeah. Still in the Vietnam War. Yeah, just a crazy time. I know my dad lived through it. He made it out okay, supposedly. But yeah, 1968. First thing here from the Washington Post, talking about history and major events in 1968. The name of the article by Mark Fisher, published in 2018, so trying to like commemorate 1968, stated in his article, "The Year America Unraveled." I mean, like, you know, you look at today's times and it's like, are you sure?
It seems kind of still unraveling.
Right.
Always and forever and constantly.
Right. So he stated 1968 was the year the center did not hold. It was the year many Americans saw their country spinning out of control. It was a shocking time, a moment of danger, destruction, and division, yet also a time of passion and possibility. The polarization that plagues the nation half a century later was born in many ways in 1968. Two of the nation's most cherished leaders, a King and a Kennedy, were assassinated. Americans watched terrible things happen on television, shattered shop windows and burning buildings after the murder of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., the heaving grief of mourners alongside railroad tracks as Robert F. Kennedy's casket passed by. So another Kennedy died in 68. In downtowns where people once came together, looters stole groceries and liquor and TV sets, and for many Americans, their sense of security. So, but it does say in 1968 was also a shining moment, a year packed with the progress that made today better than yesterday. So, yeah, it was kind of like the year that, like, there was some good, important stuff, but culturally, a lot of death.
I've always thought it would be really interesting to see America in that sort of slate of time between the 50s and then the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's just, it was a time of like, it just seems like there was a lot of like kind of delusion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was like a lot of people thought things should be getting better. Things should be like doing a lot, you know, like we're going to progress out of this. And like so many of those issues are still going on.
Yeah, isn't it the 50s where everything more delusional started happening with like a bunch of pop-up stuff just to instill some sort of spirit to make people feel better while living in the States?
Yeah, yeah. Built highways.
Scientology.
Yeah, yeah. That too. it was the, you know, post-World War II, you know, boom growth. And in a way, it was delusional because, like, every other country had been fighting a war. And America was basically left untouched. So we basically said, yeah, okay, we get it. Like, we had Pearl Harbor. That was pretty bad. But the lower 48... we're just going to produce stuff and we're going to dominate globally because everywhere else is kind of picking up the pieces.
Sort of build up that brick wall again until it gets knocked down and we have to confront all of the problems hiding behind it.
Yeah. It's but anyway, the dailymeal.com, they went over popular desserts at the time. Now, if I had to guess popular dessert, 1968, I don't know why, like with all the death and stuff going on, I would think of a cool treat, like ice cream or like a popsicle of some kind. I don't know why.
Something frozen.
Right. Yeah, something frozen. But for them, it was, all right, so yeah, so America Unraveled, we talked about that.
Yeah. Next slide.
Tunnel of fudge cake. Yeah.
You deserve to be there.
Yeah, man. Tunnel of fudge cake. That meant make at home desserts this is from the dailymeal.com, that were quick, easy, and full of cream and sugar. The top recipes of 1968 included the tunnel of fudge cake. Yeah, which became a cultural icon after winning the 1966 Pillsbury Bake Off. Yeah.
That's a Pillsbury certified boy.
Yeah, yeah. Pillsbury chocolate boy. Yeah. Well, it's got a hole in it.
It's a donut.
It's a donut.
Holy.
Yeah. And pineapple upside down cake. Another thing very popular. Jell-O whip and chill. Junket custard. Ambrosia, grasshopper pie, and of course, regular Jell-O.
Jell-O was made in 1968?
I think Jell-O was made well before. I think Jell-O was actually made like in the early, actually it was 1880 something.
Okay, but like American Jell-O was made or more
was
so
being
like...
being made.
In 1968?
Correct.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, the 50s had Jell-O molds like crazy. You know.
Okay, but like, was it the 1968 Jell-O?
Yeah, it'd be the same Jell-O. Like, Jell-O has been around for a long time.
But I don't think you are seeing what I'm trying to, like, obviously this is special Jell-O. Like,
right.
Wave of Jell-O.
Right. Yeah, wave of Jell-O.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about the, we're talking about funnel... fudge cake.
I guess.
Did I say funnel? Tunnel of fudge cake.
Oh, I read it as funnel.
Yeah, no. Tunnel of fudge cake. Which, the tunnel, that's the circle, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think people were putting strawberries and blueberries on top of it. I don't think so.
It doesn't look like it should be there.
I know. Yeah. But tunnel of fudge cake, the main thing that I'm getting from it here is almost like the molten lava cakes of old, but they just didn't want it covered. You know, they wanted to see the molten.
Yeah.
That's what I'm guessing here. But yeah. So the next one here, you got from MeTV.com, their lists of 10 fast foods, candies, and snacks turning 50 years old in 2018, based off of, you know, it being in 1968. You got McDonald's apple pie. One of my personal favorites. I liked it when they deep fried it, though. Now they bake them.
They They deep fried it?
Yeah. Yeah. They used to deep fry it, and it's like super crunchy, crispy pie crust. And now they just bake it.
I think I like that better.
Yeah. Yeah. They bake it. It's got the little slots. You can burn your mouth on it.
Yeah, I think I've only had one once, but it was still, like, surprisingly delicious.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I never would have expected a nice little apple pie slider from McDonald's.
Right.
But it's good.
But it's very good.
Which is almost kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, back then, they were saying apples and spice and everything nice. That's McDonald's hot apple pie. Caution! Filling is hot. Hot. It's so hot.
Ooh.
I bit into it and I burned my mouth. And then later they would have the coffee gate, right? The coffee cup. The lady got burned. And that was a legitimate claim.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah. And then the next thing here, you got another McDonald's favorite, the Big Mac. Yeah, it's a meal disguised as a sandwich.
I don't believe that.
I like me a Big
Mac. It's a sandwich disguised as pink goo.
No, that's the chicken nuggets.
Mm.
I'm telling you.
The pink goo can spread.
I mean, sure.
We don't know.
I think back then they weren't crafty enough, you know.
For the pink goo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kaylee, when she was younger, she would tell me that fish eyes were in chicken nuggets.
Oh, that way so you wouldn't eat them.
I think, actually, the Big Mac is a meal disguised as a fish.
So you see fish that look like Big Macs.
If you don't want to invite me back for the next episode, I would understand. Yeah, I have a neutral opinion on
a neutral.
A Big Mac.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not celebrating its birthday necessarily.
Right. Yeah, it's not like a, it's kind of not an institution anymore.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it used to be like, oh, that's a big sandwich. What? And now it's like, with Instagram, with all these other restaurants, like a Big Mac looks like a, it's like, well, why do you have a bread in the middle? Like, it's kind of, you know.
Just go to Shake Shack.
Yeah, yeah. Go to Shake Shack. Yeah, Danny Meyer, Shake Shack. Buy you a smashed burger. Anyway, if you were living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the 1960s, consider yourself lucky. You were the test market for the Big Mac, which means you got the iconic burger a year before anyone else in 1967. But the rest of the country had to wait until 68 when the Big Mac was introduced nationally for 45 cents. Yeah. The two all-beef patties and special sauce jingle would not arrive until the mid-70s, however. So,
I wonder why it was in Pittsburgh.
You know, if I remember the story correctly, there was a franchisee in Pennsylvania that created the Big Mac, and he was selling it. And some of the head folks at McDonald's were like, bruh, like, what? Why are you doing this? Like, we don't have this at other locations. And he's like, guys, just try it. You'll want to make it national after you try it. And then they tried it. And they're like, well, this guy has a horrible voice, and we kind of dislike him, but we like his sandwich.
Did they credit him?
I think so. I think they did. I think it was one of those things, like, it was always kind of like the test market kind of thing. They were like, yeah, like, look, we made the Big Mac, you know? Like,
we're McDonald's.
We're the McDonald's. We made the Big Mac.
We make it, and it's ours.
Yeah. We put cheese under the bread.
And we have two all-beef patties. You can't get beef anywhere else.
Or special sauce.
Yeah.
Which you got that special sauce? No, it wasn't pink goo.
Oh, sorry.
It's a tinted orange color.
That slipped out of my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, the next one here. You got Goober.
Goober.
Yeah, from Smucker's.
I love some Goober.
Really? I've never been a over-the-top fan of it, but I'll admit I like the strawberry with peanut butter instead of the grape and peanut butter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a sandwich in a jar. Sure, a school teacher, arithmetic, mother's pack, goober. But it's peanut butter and jelly in the same jar. An informal survey in our office concludes that nobody's mother would allow us to eat the stuff, which is a bit weird in hindsight. We ate the ingredients separately, but somehow storing them in the same glass vessel seemed like junk food. Delicious junk food. Now that we're adults, we'll eat all the goober we please, Mom.
It's funny because I'm pretty sure I've seen like a life hack just randomly on some streaming platform, at whichever one. And they put peanut butter and jelly, or it was the other way around.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that looks hideous and disgusting. And I would never do that.
Yeah.
But goober grape, it's called goober. I have to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. And with this coupon, you could save 7 cents back in 1968.
Jeez.
On gooba. Any flavor. Mm. Any flavor, you can get gooba grape, gooba strawberry, gooba blueberry, gooba lemon, gooba orange marmalade. You can get gooba, gooba, gooba everywhere. You know? That was the way it was going to go. And then the big cannon here. This is like, to me, this is the big one. Like, most people are going to be like, really? 1968. We got Red Lobster, folks.
Wow.
Yeah. Red Lobster started. Red Lobster is a Disney reference. Did you know that in Walt Disney's 1940 film Pinocchio, there's a bar called the Red Lobster Inn? In March 1968, entrepreneur Bill Darden borrowed the name, minus the inn, for a joint in Lakeland, Florida, about 50 miles from Walt Disney World. His Red Lobster restaurant was billed as a harbor for seafood lubbers. I said lubbers, but it's supposed to be lovers. I don't. Anyway, half a century later, we all sing the praises of their Cheddar Bay biscuits. Even Beyonce name drops the chain in her songs.
She released an album like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Way to go, Bay. Beyonce. Yep.
Yeah, but, I wonder how old their cheddar biscuits are, because that's Red Lobster to me. Nothing. Right. Not even the lobster.
The biscuit. I don't eat their fish. I don't eat their lobster.
I only eat the cheddar biscuits.
Yeah. Hey, Tony. Yeah, I want a water and some cheddar bay biscuits.
That's all.
Little cheddar bay biscuits.
And also, can I have the key to the bathroom?
Yeah. I need the key so I can lock it.
Yeah, because I'm going to eat a lot of cheddar biscuits.
I can't have dairy, but I love cheddar bay biscuits.
I can't have lobster either.
Yeah. Got to have enough cheddar bay biscuits. Give me the key. And then the next one, which I had not had this candy until I think 2018. Zots.
Is that the candy you get on like the really big strips?
You can. Yeah, you can get like a strip of it. The main thing is it's like a little Zappo type of candy. It's crazy. The Sour Bombs trace their origin back to Italy. That sour burst would radically change the candy industry. A couple decades later, kids couldn't get enough of these extremely sour tongue assaults like Warheads.
Yeah, I don't think I like those.
See, these were like, whenever I tried it, I tried a... Actually, I think it was an orange. Yeah. And what happened, I was like, huh, is this like a new candy? And the gal that I had taken the candy from, she's like, no, this is like a super old candy. Like, da 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 da. And I'm like, then why have I never heard of this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she then shamed me because I'm a millennial. And, but no, I mean, it was like, yeah, no, it's kind of sour-ish, you know? And that's the thing is, like, since Warheads... Zots is pretty, you know, tame compared to that. So I like tried it and I was like, well, what's the sour part? It's the center. It's like a jelly, super sugary center. And it is. It's rather electrifying. Yeah. And then the next one here, if you were a Cowboy fan, you got Roy Rogers roast beef sandwiches. Yeah, the first Roy Rogers opened in 1968 in Falls Church, Virginia. Hey, there's your Virginia. That's right, you got Virginia. If you're looking to go there to celebrate the chain's 50th birthday, don't. It's now a McDonald's. The chain was founded by Marriott Hotels, who licensed the name of the popular cowboy to replace their brand of quick service eateries called Hot Shops Jr. Today, there are a little more than 50 Roy Rogers in America. So these still exist.
For how long?
I don't know.
I think we should go to all 50.
All 50.
And just interview them all and be like, hello, Roy Rogers. Even though they wouldn't be named for Roy Rogers.
We would walk
Rogers.
In and be like, I want a number 5 combo. Make it a large. I want Coke Zero. And where's Roy?
Also, can I speak to your manager, Roy Rogers?
I need to speak to Mr. Roy
all
Rogers,
all 50
please.
Of him.
Yeah. He's at every location, correct? Right? Yeah.
He's a cowboy.
Yeah. Rides a horse.
He's wanted.
Yeah. He's on the poster.
Yeah. And he's offering a roast beef sandwich if I find him.
Yeah.
All 50 of him. So I could get 50 sandwiches.
What if... So here's the thing that I always think of when I see stuff like this. Kind of like John Wayne or some of these other guys. What if you actually talk to Roy Rogers and at any point Roy just goes, hey, you know the sandwich that everybody eats? Yeah. I hate roast beef. And it's like,
Roy.
Roy!
What are you talking about? Yeah. That's your entire legacy.
Right.
You have to like it.
Like, I always think of that. Like, what if, Marriott Hotels are like, we're just going to name it a Roy Rogers roast beef sandwich. Why? Because it starts with R. And then they get Roy Rogers. They do a photo shoot. They do all this stuff for it. And then he's like, wait a minute, what kind of sandwich? And they're like, roast beef. And he's like, hate roast beef.
Roy is like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I like Italian sandwiches, not roast beef.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Why don't you have gabagool?
Can I back out of this deal? And they're like, no, Roy, you're a cowboy.
Yeah. You don't back out of deals. Cowboys don't back out of deals.
You defy deals.
You shoot deals dead. That's the... There's a new sheriff in town, and it's called Roy's Making Deals.
And he's just crying the whole time. I don't want roast beef.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. To me, a roast beef sandwich, it's a little weird, and you can tell in the picture, too. Like, it's just the roast beef with bread.
I don't know if I want that sandwich.
Yeah, there's no sauce.
Doesn't make it advertising.
Yeah, there's
and
no
honestly,
cheese.
Honestly, the more we talk about it, it looks like he's just being forced to smile for that picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, you know, that's everybody back then.
Right.
They were like, I do not want to stand in front of this thing that has an exploding bulb. And they're like, no, Roy, smile. It's like, yeah, like, you got to watch out. And so, yeah, he does. He looks a little like, what kind of sandwich? And then they took the So it was a whole thing. But moving away from the 1968 that they all knew and loved, we got... From theleftchapter.com, Soviet life and Russian cuisine. It was a 1968 vintage cookbook. And yeah, that's right. You had a Russian cuisine little chef here that made many of foods like fish aspic. And the garnish for fish aspic, let's take a great look here. You got one tomato slice, a lemon slice, an egg sliced with olives. Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then the other one here, you have pierogi, right? So everybody knows pierogi. That's good stuff. And then we got stolichny salad, which was a cup of diced boiled potatoes, a cup of diced cooked chicken, 2/3 cup diced cucumbers, 1/2 cup chopped lettuce, and then 2 diced hard-boiled eggs mixed together with 2 tablespoons of catsup, not ketchup, and 2/3 cup mayonnaise. So it's kind of like a chicken salad.
I think I would take out the eggs, and then I would eat that.
Yeah. You'd eat it. Okay. And then beef stroganoff, which is one of my favorites. I love beef stroganoff.
Oh, man, I love beef stroganoff.
Yeah. Beef stroganoff is like top tier awesome foods.
Yeah, my friend's mom makes the best beef stroganoff I've ever had.
It's savory. It's really good. Mushrooms and onions in it.
Oh, and the beef.
The boof. Gotta have the boof. Yeah. And then chicken Kiev. Yeah. You got chicken breast, and then you got unsalted butter, sorry, an egg, some milk, salt, pepper, flour, breadcrumb, chicken Kiev. Ugh. My mom made chicken Kiev one time. I loved it.
I've heard about chicken Kiev, but I've just never had it.
It's kind of like the Russian chicken schnitzel, you know? It's kind of that way.
Never had a schnitzel either.
Yeah, yeah. Then you got the fillet of fish from Russian cuisine. Yeah, that's right. You got lemon cake. Ooh. There was shishi. It's hard to make this. Shishi, which was dried mushrooms, sauerkraut, beef bouillon, tomato paste, bay leaves, carrot and onion, young parsnips, vegetable oil, peppercorns, and sour cream to taste. And so that sounds like a, like, sauce? Mm. Yeah.
Or maybe even a dip?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know what you would dip in it.
I don't know. Maybe chicken Kiev.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Or like a sandwich or something.
Yeah. Be like a jus, you know? Then you had shashlik. Yeah. That would have been a popular one back then. And then moving on to good old food timeline. We got here, you got good old foods that were established in 1968. First one here, snack pack. That's right. You trading snack packs with people. That's what I remember. If I ever had a vanilla, there was a person in, like, on my table in second grade that I could swap my vanilla snack pack for their chocolate. And then I would swap the chocolate snack pack with somebody else who brought Gushers.
Oh.
Yeah, because at the time, they were, like, on this kick of, like, I do not like fruity, gummy, whatever. And I'm like, I'm addicted. And so here's some chocolate. And they're like, oh, I love chocolate. I'm like, give me a Gushers.
So gummies have followed you for a long, long time.
Yeah, no.
They didn't even offer us vanilla one time. They offered us rice pudding. I like it more now, but as like a kindergartner with a stupid little baby brain. Sorry, right. I'm not insulting other babies, just past baby me. Of course I wanted chocolate,
right.
But I was way too shy to like go and approach and be like, I want chocolate. So I just stood there and cried as I received rice pudding.
You internally, you know, you thought nobody heard, but in reality, you're just standing in line and going,
chocolate, please. Yeah, exactly like that.
They're like, Marissa, are you okay? You're like, oh, I'm fine. Yeah, why? I'm okay.
Just gotta go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I'm gonna probably swap my rice pudding for something else. Don't worry about it.
For toilet paper to wipe my tears.
Yeah, and then the next one here, which now is not the same thing. It says space food sticks.
Yeah, I completely forgot the space race is happening here.
Yeah, so it says the original Astro snack established in 1969. Why does it say that? Well, because it went with them in the mission to Mars and all that kind of, or Mars, the moon. a little forward there.
We went to Mars?
Yeah, right?
Whoa.
I knew it was faked. But now, the space food sticks is actually a weed snack.
What?
Yeah, they call it space food, kind of like space brownies or whatever. Yeah, so it's actually kind of a pot weed food. Space food sticks, if you go to order them now, you're going to get like a pot stick, which I thought was a joint, but it's a food, so you can eat it.
I'll just simmer in my confusion.
Let's go to the spacefoodsticks.com. Take a look here. I'm 21. Yeah, I'm 21. Why not? Space Food Sticks, mission approved. You go to launch and it's like, hey, recreational space food sticks. 10 milligrams each for a total of 50 milligrams per package of milk chocolate sativa and dark chocolate indica. That's, yeah, so,
holy cow.
Yep, They are now Pot Food Sticks, based out of Denver, Colorado.
Would you like to order some for Uniquely Umami?
No.
Okay.
No. But it does say their vision, by infusing the classic Astro snack with THC, our vision is to create space for the hero and heroine within all of us to explore heroine. The universe. Yeah, right. Heroine. It is our goal to encourage optimism and inspiration for a future that elevates our senses, spirit, and curiosity. That is a lot of words to describe. Please buy our product so you can get high.
I want
to
bookmark this website.
No, you don't. Well, you're not of age. You're not of age.
No, but like, it's cool.
I mean, it's interesting to
Space
me just that
food sticks.
I know that it used to be this like, hey, everybody get your space food sticks. And now it's like,
okay, we're tired of the moon. Let's go to weed.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next one here, the one that I actually enjoy quite a bit, but I'll admit you can screw these up very easily. The taco salad. Ugh. Yep. See, what, now why do you...
Oh, because you can mess it up, I think.
Yeah.
And even stuff with like a taco pizza, I think you can mess up because we were talking about it the other day. I feel like if you attempt to turn something into a taco something without knowing how to make taco something, then you probably shouldn't be doing it.
Right.
But I love, like, now I feel mean because I'm just pooping on everything. That's not what I mean. I just mean I just think that sometimes it can be messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's because it's like so hard to nail down.
Right. To me, just like kind of like what you mentioned, if with the ingredients you have, you couldn't make a good taco with it, it does not mean you should make a salad with it. You have to have good ingredients. If you got crappy lettuce, taco salad ruined. Right. And then it's like they have in the picture here, like a pico de gallo. Mm-hmm. Right. If you got like a liquidy pico de gallo, bad taco salad, bad taco. It's going to drip all over you. So it has to be good as a taco as well as a salad. That's what makes this a beautiful invention. Taco salad, it is a modern variation on the traditional Tex-Mex dish. These recipes began to show up in American cookbooks magazines in the 1960s. Taco salad. This salad arrived with the Tex-Mex fast food franchises, which began to pepper the country in the 60s. The man who whetted our appetite for hot and spicy was Glenn Bell, who opened the first Taco Bell in Downey, California. That was 1962. Did Taco Bell originate the taco salad? I've been unable to prove it did or didn't. The first recipe I could find for taco salad appeared in the May 1968 issue of Sunset. This was from an American Century cookbook, The Most Popular Recipes of the 20th Century by Gene Anderson, published in 1997. And that same recipe, the Sunset magazine in May 1968, page 167 for those folks who still have it, you got a pound of lean ground beef, a quarter cup of finely chopped onion, a half teaspoon of salt, 2 teaspoons chili pepper, a can or 8 ounces of tomato sauce, 1 medium head iceberg lettuce, 1/2 cup shredded cheddar cheese, 2 medium-sized tomatoes peeled and cut into wedges, 1 avocado peeled and sliced, and then 1 1/2 corn chips or tortilla chips.
That would be so good.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty good. Mm. Fry meat, an onion over medium-high heat, you get it. You basically make a taco. You throw it in a tortilla, crumply shell, kind of like what we got pictured here, or over tortilla chips, one or the other. And you have yourself a great little taco salad. But yeah, it says here you can add chopped green chilies or liquid hot pepper seasoning. Yeah.
Ooh, chilies in it would be good.
Or yeah.
Just more peppers.
Mm-hmm. More peppers. Jalapenos. Mm. I love it with raw jalapenos. It's pretty good. Pickled jalapenos are all right, but then you can't have too liquidy of something on it, right? You gotta have a taco salad that stays a good non-soupy texture.
Yeah.
It's a salad.
It can't get moist.
Right. Right. And so the next one here, which I think we didn't see this earlier. Anyway.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
Nope.
So we saw...
Wow, is that a fruit cake?
Almost. It is astronaut. fruitcake. So it's a special type of fruitcake. Although the U.S. Army Natick Laboratories originally created this fruitcake recipe for space food for the astronauts, there is no reason why you can't prepare this simplified version for the youngsters at your house. Surely they will like the idea of eating the same delicious dessert the astronauts eat. Furthermore, you'll like the energy and nutrients packed into each scrumptious slice, right along with glazed cherries, chopped pecans, and Bordeaux imported dates. So bake this very special astronaut fruitcake for your children this week, and stand by to receive a hearty A-OK. Yeah. So astronaut fruitcake, basically it's the same as regular fruitcake. You add more vanilla, and then you add chopped pecans, which most fruitcakes have it. But basically they compound it. They basically like really put it together. It's not very cakey. It's more like a bar. That's what I see.
Mm.
It's like a bar of fruitcake.
It looks pretty good.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't it be?
I don't think I've ever had a fruitcake, and most of them have sort of, I've been a little bit weary of for no reason in particular, just probably because I've never had it, so I don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
But that looks really good.
Yeah. I think culturally, fruitcake gets like a crazy bad rep.
Yeah.
Right? Because
I feel like it's slammed a lot, right. And I don't know why.
I think it's because it has always been gifted in Christmas past. Like, people get a fruitcake, and they're like, why am I getting this fruitcake? And it's filled with, like, pecans or almonds, and I don't like, you know, nuts in the cake. Like, whatever. And I kind of had the same vision for a long time, and then I had, I think it was a class in high school where the teacher was like, I got this fruitcake from a student and I do not like fruitcake. And so does anybody want it? And I remember like at lunch that day, I wanted to grab a dessert and they didn't have it. And so I was like, well, I'll just grab this guy's fruitcake. I'm going to give it a shot. If it's still bad, I throw it in the trash. I ate like just the smallest piece of it. And I was like, this is an amazing cake. Yeah. Why do people hate fruitcake? Fruitcake is amazing. Like, oh my God. And I ate the whole piece. And then I remember like from every like little party that came after that, I would like, if it was Christmas based in any way, I'm like,
fruitcake?
Yeah. Anybody buy a traditional fruitcake?
So I know that not a lot of people like fruitcake, but do you have fruitcake?
Yeah.
Yeah, personally, I wouldn't want the nuts in it. And I don't know if I've said this before. Maybe I have. I don't know. But I personally don't like nuts in my dessert of any kind.
Yeah.
And it's not like I hate it or I wouldn't try it if it did have nuts in it. It's just I don't really look for something like that in a dessert, much like how I don't look for a sweet dinner or anything that isn't more savory.
Yeah.
I think I have a very particular vision of like, this should be sweet. And then if nuts are in it, that kind of takes away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of degrades it. You know, I'll be the first one when I was younger, didn't like nuts and desserts. I still don't like nuts and brownies.
Oh.
When people do that, I'm like, dude, the whole point of a brownie is
to be chocolate.
Right. Just pure chocolate, chewy, like moist brownie. Like, why are you ruining it with whatever you're putting? But if it's a black walnut, I'll still like the taste, but the texture, I'm going to be like, yeah, texture's off. But I'm not a baby. I don't care about texture anymore.
You are not a baby. Certified, not a baby. Coming from me. Ignore him. You are not a baby if you have texture issues, because I do too. And he yells at me a lot about it, and it's really hard and difficult, but you aren't a baby.
So. I get on to everybody. There's a person that I work with that I get on to them all the time because it's like every other food. They will say, you know, I'm like, why don't you like this? And they're like, oh, it's a texture thing. And I'm like, oh, you're a child. Like, you are a child. So you're saying the flavor tastes fine. And they're like, oh, yeah, flavor's fine. I'm like, oh, okay. You just don't like the texture, the mouth feel. You can't.
We need to recognize that Devin here can eat anything.
I know.
With, like, it's like, you don't understand texture. I don't think you have that in your, like, DNA the same way that other people do. And yeah. I think you like only recognize texture when you like it, but you like every texture. So there's something in you that like...
It's just wrong. It's not right. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, here's my one thing for folks who are like, Devin, how do you do this? The thing that broke my texture button was a slice of like a red apple with really good sharp cheddar cheese. When you eat those two things together, the apple gets granular, grainy, and the cheese is like way beyond smooth. And it broke my mouth because the texture was so bad. I thought it was something that had like curdled. I was like, this is so weird. And yet my taste buds were like apple and cheese. This is delicious. Yeah. Like, this is so good. And that's what broke it. Because then I kept eating it, and I'm like, the texture makes me want to almost gag. But it's so good. Like, why? And, like, I think my grandma had been eating that, like, all, like, as a snack the whole time. And I'm, like, trying it for the first time, and I'm like... Like, I'm just making all sorts of weird faces. And she's like, what's wrong? I'm like... Texture's a little weird. She's like, well, it tastes good. I'm like, yeah, it does. Like, I'm gonna finish this. That's all I can do, you know? And then I finished it, and I'm like, yeah, that was delicious. I just, it broke my texture button. I don't know how else to put it. It grabbed the thing in your head that goes, texture matters. And it was like, it was gone after that. But a better texture is impossible pie. Yeah, look at this thing. Yeah, kind of coconutty looking.
What is going on there?
Just a mountain of pie.
What's impossible about it?
Well, let's read on. Is it possible to mix up several ingredients, pour it into a baking receptacle, and have the layers naturally settle into a pie formation? Crust on the bottom, filling on the top. Yes, according to the makers of Impossible Pie, this 20th century novelty recipe took some parts of our country by storm. The origins of Impossible Pie, aka Mystery Pie or Coconut Amazing Pie, are sketchy at best. A survey of newspaper and magazine articles suggests this recipe originated in the South. Makes sense. It's a cold pie, right? So, makes sense. It says where coconut custard pies are popular. It was discovered by General Mills, and it says discovered in asterisk, by General Mills, Bisquick, and General Foods, who capitalized on the opportunity to promote their products. Corporate recipes surfaced in the mid-1970s. There are conflicting reports about the dates of introduction, but the earliest recipe we have on file was published in 1968. None of the ingredients are name brand. This article sums it up best. Amazing, mysterious, it could be none other than the Impossible Pie, one of the most successful corporate recipe projects in the U.S. food marketing history. Versions of Impossible Pie were also named Mystery Pie or Amazing Coconut Pie. By any name, though, Americans took to the easy recipe that is adaptable for making both sweet dessert pies and savory meat, vegetable, and cheese pies? I think not. Anyway, back when quiche was trendy. Yeah. Trendy quiche. The trendy Impossible Pie formula called for ingredients similar to those for quiche, yet eliminated the need to make a separate pastry crust. Not one, but two huge food corporations benefited by popularizing the simple recipe formula for the Impossible Pie mixtures. The two big generals. One was the Minneapolis-based General Mills, home of mythical Betty Crocker and maker of Bisquick all-purpose baking mix, and the other was General Foods of White Plains, New York, marketer of Angel Flake processed coconut. The real mystery, where did this recipe originate? And then it goes on and on and on about 1976, test kitchens and all this. It just says, so it was grassroots recipe at first. Origin was unknown. Some very old community cookbooks contain pie recipes that make their own crust just from flour. Others call for homemade biscuit mix or like a biscuit dough. Copeland said that the Impossible Pie phenomenon lasted from the late 1970s through the 80s, and General Mills home economists developed variations for Impossible Chicken and Broccoli Pie, for enchilada lasagna, taco pizza, and beef mushroom Impossible Pies, even an Impossible Turkey and Stuffing Pie. Yeah.
I don't trust any of the meat ones.
No, that it's a little odd. And that was a segment coming from the food timeline, but also Mission Impossible Pie, The Secrets in the Batter by Joyce Rosencrans of the Houston Chronicle back in 1993.
That's a silly title.
It is, isn't it? But yeah, so their Impossible Pie, it's 4 eggs beaten well, 2 cups of milk, a cup and 3/4 of sugar, half a cup of melted butter, tablespoon of vanilla, and 1 can or 7 ounces of flaked coconut. You blend together sugar and flour, add milk to beaten eggs, stir in the melted butter and coconut, pour into 9-inch pie pans, 2 of them, bake at 350 degrees for 30 to 45 minutes. And you got yourself an Impossible Pie.
I don't feel very interested.
You know, I like coconut pies, coconut cream pies. They're pretty good. I think the whole, like, it's impossible, that they shouldn't have named it that.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have, because it makes sense. You make your batter, you throw coconut in it, the coconut's lighter than the batter, so the coconut goes to the top.
I think you should just call it, like, a quick bake.
Right. Coconut quick bake, right?
Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't like coconut very much.
Right.
Unless it's super not present.
Right.
Like, you know those little, I don't know if you know them, maybe somebody will, but there's like the little breakfast cracker things where it's like they're the flat things,
yeah,
and there's like a coconut one.
Yeah.
Those are good, and I like that kind of coconut, but this, I don't think I would like because it's so coconutty.
So let me rephrase this for you. You like coconut flavor. You don't like coconut texture.
I like 1/4 of coconut flavor.
Oh, okay. So even the coconut flavor, you're like, meh.
Yeah.
Like, meh, 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 meh.
Correct. So you, yeah. I do that noise each time.
Meh, 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 meh.
Meh.
Yeah.
Meh. No coconut.
Meh. No coconut.
Meh. No. No, giddy out.
Meh. Yeah. Yeah. But no, I once again, this is one of those foods that, like, I think when I was younger, I would look at coconut cream pie or some of the other coconut pies or coconut cake, which I started to love coconut cake. But the main thing it was a texture thing. But then on top of that, like shaved coconut, when it's like wet is odd. And so if it's in icing or like other stuff, it's not toasted and it's not just by itself. That really weirded me out. And now I don't care. It could be whatever. It could be the flavoring. It could be wet, dry, don't care. But I'll admit, toasted coconut is a great flavor. But this Impossible Pie, it would be impossibly hard to resist. Yeah. So, but yeah, next time on our plate in time, we are headed to 1900. Yeah.
Virginia.
No, not Virginia. It's just 1900.
West Virginia.
West Virginia, mountain mama.
That says Virginia right there.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't say Virginia. Where does it say Virginia?
Culinary Virginia.
No. Nope. But no, this was 1968. What do you think of 1968? You think food-wise you could have lasted? Could have done it?
Most likely.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been fine.
Yeah, yeah. Would have been fine.
No coconut, though.
No coconut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goober, yeah.
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 You can, I feel like I would just get a spoon and eat goober.
Yeah, and I will say, looking through the, like, tons of desserts.
Mm. Not a lot of food.
Right. I mean, taco salad, Russian cuisine.
Yeah, that's a lie. There was a lot of Russian recipes.
And then there was roast beef and Red Lobster. So, yeah. And then the Big Mac, which you're like, no, more like medium Charlie. What? I don't know. We'll see everybody next time on A Plate in Time in 1900. Thank you, Marissa, for joining me.
Thanks, Devin.
Yay! See you next time, everybody.
Bye. Woohoo! No mayonnaise.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.